It kills 8 more Palestinians in the occupied West Bank amid an uptick in violence since the regime launched its war on the Gaza Strip. Welcome to our studios in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The Palestinians in Gaza have been witnessing an unending cycle of bloodshed for 39 consecutive days. Israel's fresh airstrikes have claimed dozens more civilian lives across the besieged territory. 6 members of a Palestinian family were killed in an attack on a house in the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. They are in addition to 30 people who were killed in yet another airstrike there. In the southern city of Khan Yunis, 10 people were killed in new Israeli bombardment. The total Palestinian death toll from the Israeli war now tops 11,200, mostly women and children. A total of 47 Israeli soldiers have also been killed in the ground operation in Gaza. They include 2 soldiers killed on Monday night in the northern Gaza. The Palestinian Health Ministry warns that all hospitals in the Gaza Strip will be dysfunctional within the next 48 hours unless they receive urgent medical aid. Those medical facilities are in desperate need of life-saving equipment as well as fuel for their electric generators. One of the hardest-hit medical facilities is Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. The Israeli military has been encircling it with armored vehicles for the past several days, under the pretext that Palestinian fighters are present around the hospital. The Hamas resistance movement has, however, denied the Israeli claim. A separate warning of the fuel crisis in Gaza has also been issued by the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. UNRWA said its operations in Gaza will shut down within 2 days due to shortages. Meanwhile, the UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs has also warned about the dire situation of hospitals in Gaza. Let's take a listen to comments by the head of the office, Andrea Domenico.
In Gaza, fighting around Al-Shifa Hospital intensified over the weekend. In Al-Shifa Hospital, critical infrastructure were damaged, including water tanks, oxygen stations, the cardiovascular facility, and the maternity ward. 3 nurses were also reported killed. Many of the people that were in the hospital have fled or tried to flee. Some have remained behind. It's very difficult for us to establish how many are still in the premises. In particular, we call everybody to respect hospitals. IHL specifically protect hospitals and medical personnel. Hospitals must not be made places of warfare. Any military operation around or within hospital must take steps to spare and protect the patients, medical staff, and other civilians, and all feasible precautions must be taken, including the effective warnings, which consider the ability of patients, medical staff, and other civilians to evacuate safely. Lives in Gaza are hanging by a thread due to depleting of fuel and medical supplies. We hear that patients are already dying, and we have been reported a few cases. Also, access to water and food has become more and more difficult for those remaining. And we are trying to figure out better how many have remained behind, but it is, of course, a little bit complicated given the inability of our teams to go in the north of the Gaza Strip.
Palestinians in Gaza say the U.S. is complicit in the Israeli war in the territory. They believe Washington's military support has emboldened the regime to intensify its brutal attacks in Gaza.
The weapons of the Zionist entity are American weapons. America is capable and able to protect the Palestinian people by cutting off the supply of weapons and ammunition to the Zionist entity. America is the main culprit in killing Palestinian children. All the massacres that occur in Gaza are in direct violation of the 4th Geneva Convention agreed upon by all countries, including the Zionist entity.
Until now, the international community remains silent in the face of the crimes committed by the Israeli occupation against Palestinian civilians in the Gaza Strip. Unfortunately, no steps have been taken towards reaching a ceasefire or facilitating the delivery of aid to the besieged Gaza Strip. The entire international community is still complicit in the siege and the war that Israel is waging against Gaza.
Everywhere you look around, there is a mortar, mutilated body of a Palestinian child, or a destroyed house, and it is all because of American weapons that were given to Israel. Where is the Western world in all of this? No one cares about the children of Palestine. What did the Western leaders do to stop the massacres? The United States keeps sending nuclear submarines and warships to support Israel.
I'm pessimistic about the situation here, what the United States is doing for supporting Israel, not the both sides. So the United States is being just supporting Israel by some weapons and some supplies, equipment. That increases the situation here in Gaza. What I mean situation, like killing people, injuring people here. Well, our international community is being silent these days. And when the international community is silent, doesn't mean like it's just supporting both sides or just silence nowadays is being supported for the genocide.
Rashida Tlaib is a Palestinian-American lawmaker who has for several times called on the U.S. government to stop Israel's war on Gaza. Just days ago, the House of Representatives, including some of her Democratic colleagues, censured her over comments critical of Israel and in support of Palestinians. But during a presser outside of Capitol Hill on Monday, Tlaib reiterated her call and slammed Israel's killing of thousands of children in the besieged Palestinian territory.
We will not be intimidated. We will not be silenced. And we will not stop until we save lives. We will continue to demand a ceasefire, demand the immediate delivery of humanitarian aid in Gaza. How many more lives will be enough? How many more children have to be killed? How many more families traumatized and torn apart? There is nothing humanitarian about giving innocent civilians a four-hour break before they are bombed. We are calling for an end to the violence, not a break in the violence. The humanitarian pause is not enough. President Biden, humanitarian pause is not enough. President Biden, I hope you're listening. I'm consistent in telling this over and over again. You must listen to the voices of the majority of Americans who are calling for a ceasefire now. So today, again, please look to the majority of your residents, many of which supported you. They're calling you to do what's right. End the violence, support a ceasefire now.
More Palestinians have fallen victim to Israeli aggression across the occupied West Bank. Regime forces have killed seven Palestinians during pre-dawn raids on the city of Tulkarm and a refugee camp there. The Palestinian Health Ministry said that people were killed in clashes with Israeli forces and drone strikes by the regime. A dozen more were injured, with some being in critical condition. Regime troopers also fatally shot another man in the Beit Einun Junction area. There have been reports of clashes in the town of Qalqilya as well. Israel has intensified its bloody attacks on the West Bank. Nearly 190 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces and settlers across the occupied territories since October the 7th. More than 30 civil society and faith-based organizations in the U.S. have called on the Pentagon to halt its plans for transferring artillery shells to Israel for the use in Gaza. In a letter to the Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, the organization said the transfer of these ammunitions to Israel jeopardizes civilians and contravenes international humanitarian law. Also in the U.S., the Center for Constitutional Rights has filed a federal lawsuit on behalf of Palestinian human rights organizations. It has accused President Joe Biden, the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, and the Pentagon chief of abetting Israel's genocide in Gaza. In the meantime, Indonesian President Joko Widodo has met Biden at the White House, telling him that the U.S. should do more to help stop the Israeli atrocities in Gaza. Brazil's President Lula da Silva has also taken a jab at Israel for killing children.
I've never heard of children being the preferred victims of a war. The number of women and children who have already died and the number of children who have gone missing is unheard of in any other war.
Lula also accused Israel of killing innocent people without any scruples. He dismissed Israel's justification for bombing hospitals under the pretext of hitting fighters of the resistance movement Hamas. He said there is no explanation for dropping bombs on hospitals and where children have taken shelter. Let's cross on over to Khan Yunis and talk to our correspondent Ashraf Shannon, who joins us. Ashraf, over to you. What do you have for us?
Yes, Kaveh. Israeli fighter jets continue to pound the Gaza Strip. Almost every town and village is under attack, but the main attacks are taking place around Shifa Hospital and Al-Quds Hospital, as well as the Indonesian Hospital. They are all in the north of the Gaza Wadi, the all in northern Gaza. Palestinians, especially the resistance movement Hamas, has expressed anger over the statements made by an Israeli minister saying that the Gaza Strip must have a new Nakba or catastrophe. It was referring to the Nakba of 1948, where more than 800,000 Palestinians were displaced and dispossessed upon the creation of the Israeli regime. Well, actually, he doesn't need to say Nakba about what's happening. Already, the Palestinians in Gaza had their Nakba more than 2 weeks ago, when around 1.5 million Palestinians in the northern part of the Gaza Strip were forced by Israeli army threats to head south towards Nusayrat, Maghazi, Bridge, Khan Yunis, and Rafah in the southern part of the Gaza Strip, in addition to the over 1,200 massacres that have taken place during the 39 days of Israeli aggression, mainly against the women and children in Gaza, against the infrastructure in Gaza, against the water system, the sewage system, the electricity grids, and telecommunication networks. Everything in Gaza has been under attack, from the rocks to the people, to the animals, to the plants. Everything has been under attack for 39 days. Israel has made sure that one day when this war ends, and everything must end at one point, Gaza will be unlivable. This is what they're trying to do.
They have said that they have actually sealed off the northern part to the southern part. Is the northern part of Gaza City at this point completely demolished, unlivable? And if so, aren't there people still in the northern part of Gaza Strip, obviously? We know that some have migrated from the north to the south.
Well, Kabe, around 60 to 65% of buildings in the entire Gaza Strip have been either partially or completely destroyed. But the mass destruction was in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. When you say northern part, we're talking about the north of the Gaza Wadi. That's almost like in the middle of the Gaza Strip. And around 200,000 people are still living in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. They have no hospital to take care of them. They have basically no ambulances to pick up the injured or the dead. As I said a few days ago, there were only 7 ambulances serving the entire part, the northern part of the Gaza Strip. And basically, all hospitals have stopped working, especially that they have no fuel for the electricity backup generators. And Israel continues to pound their homes, their businesses, their farms. Everything in Gaza is being attacked. And there is no break. Everyone is being attacked. And yesterday, the Israeli regime placed electronic gates on the road, on Saladin Road, connecting north and southern Gaza. Some people might ask, why can't people just walk on the beach and head south? They can't, because the Israeli regime and its tanks have dissected the Gaza Strip right in through the middle. So from the Mediterranean Sea all the way to the eastern part of the Gaza Strip, there are Israeli tanks, armored personnel carriers, and military jeeps stationed there, and they shoot at anyone that moves unless they go through that part of Saladin Road if they want to head south. And you cannot, for sure. No one can head north.
So when you take a look at the fact that there have been 38 to 39 days of this bombardment that has taken place in the Gaza Strip, and based on what you said, you have 60% of all buildings in the Gaza Strip to either be partially destroyed or completely leveled to the ground. And, of course, given the unfortunate casualties that have erupted, what has Israel exactly achieved vis-a-vis the number of Hamas or resistance fighters they say that they have killed? I mean, did the destruction and the civilian casualties amount to any goals that they have in terms of eradicating Hamas, which was their, and resistance fighters, which was their main goal? Because it doesn't add up.
Well, first of all, the 60 to 65% destruction, this is statistics by the United Nations Development Program. And regarding the goals that Israel has achieved, this is really weird, because the last list I saw through the Israeli Army website it were like 10 or 15 Hamas military commanders. That's all they got. While they killed some 12,000 people, mostly children and women, and 3,000 more people are still missing under the rubble. Israel did not achieve anything except maybe killing more than a dozen Hamas military commanders. And the only thing they got is they lost, according to them, 45 Israeli soldiers and commanders. But Hamas's military wing, the Zir Qassam Brigade, says they've killed hundreds of Israeli soldiers during the 39 days of fighting.
All right, thank you very much for that. Ashraf Shannon there from Khan Yunis. We appreciate it. Lebanon's Hezbollah movement has launched several retaliatory strikes against Israeli-occupied territories in support of the Palestinian resistance in Gaza. Hezbollah announced in a statement on Monday that the movement had targeted a number of sites occupied by Israeli forces with appropriate weapons, causing damage and injuries. It also targeted Israeli infantry at Al-Dahira site with missiles, inflicting heavy losses among the enemy's ranks. Hezbollah and Israeli troops have been engaged in direct clashes since the regime's brutal war on the besieged Gaza Strip started on October the 7th. The movement says attacks against Israel will continue until it stops its crimes against Palestinians. Israel's atrocities across the Gaza Strip is giving rise to more international hatred against the Tel Aviv regime. And with that, we come to an end for this additional World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of speech delivered by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the organizers of the National Congress of the Martyrs of Lorestan Province on October 25, 2023. I would like to say a few words about the situation in Gaza. The blow that has been inflicted in this event, in the attack by the Palestinian fighters on the usurping regime, was a decisive blow. Never before had such a blow been inflicted on the regime. And as I mentioned from the start, it is irreparable. As time passes, it becomes even more apparent that it is irreparable. Why do you think the President of the US and the heads of oppressive evil countries, the UK, France, and Germany, are continuously making their way there? It is because they see that the Zionist regime, is falling apart. They see that it is being destroyed. They realize this, so they keep going there to prevent its destruction.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
It If the usurping regime was not in danger of falling apart and being destroyed, these evil powers in the world would not feel a need to continuously go there to express their solidarity with the Zionist regime. This shows that they have suffered a very strong, decisive blow. And well, this battered, wounded, crippled regime, which they are struggling to keep on its feet using weapons, so-called bombs, etc., this regime has not been able to overpower the Palestinian fighters, and it won't be able to overpower the fighters. Thus, it takes its revenge on defenseless, oppressed civilians and drops bombs on them. The Palestinian fighters are still prepared. They have been prepared to take action and have maintained their spirit, motivation, and ability to act during this period, and God willing, they will continue to do the same after this. I believe that anyone who talks about Gaza should talk about the patience of the people, the power of the people, and the power of the fighters. Otherwise, they will be doing them an injustice. Truly, the patience they have shown is very important. Another main point is that in this matter, the US is definitely an accomplice of the criminals. In other words, in this crime, the US's hand is drenched and stained up to its elbow with the blood of the oppressed, the children, the sick, women, and others. Actually, it is the US that is somehow managing the crime that is being committed in Gaza. The US is the one that is managing this.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Figures reported by the charity organization Save the Children shows the number of children killed in the Gaza Strip as a result of Israel's ongoing aggression has exceeded annual figures related to global conflicts over the past 4 years. The international NGO says that Israel's brutal military attack against Gaza, which began on October 7 in response to an operation by the Palestinian resistance group Hamas, has so far killed more than the annual number of children killed in armed conflicts globally in each of the past 4 years. According to multiple reports, including the Palestinian Health Ministry and the Defense for Children International, DCI, one child is being killed in Gaza every 10 minutes. Euromed Human Rights Monitor said in a press release on October 18 that since the launch of the indiscriminate bombing crusade against Gaza, an average of 100 children have been killed daily. Hundreds of children are still trapped under the rubble of residential buildings targeted during Israel's strikes on Gaza, and they have not been rescued yet, which implies the actual death toll could be higher. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said in a statement that at least 1,000 children are missing under the rubble in Gaza. The ongoing siege and the relentless bombardment are impeding search and rescue operations.
Gaza has become a graveyard for children. It's a living hell for everyone else. And yet the threats to children go beyond bombs and mortars. And I want to speak briefly now on two of those, water and trauma. The more than 1 million children of Gaza have a critical water crisis. Gaza's water production now, its capacity is at 5%, 5% of its daily output. So child deaths to dehydration, particularly infant deaths to dehydration, are a growing threat.
The UN Committee on the Rights of the Child has also issued a statement saying grave human rights violations against children are mounting by the minutes in the Gaza Strip. The statement says armed conflict harms children first and foremost and has lifelong effects on their physical and mental health, their development, and ultimately the enjoyment of all their rights. Children are also harmed when they survive, but lose parents and other family members and friends, and also witness catastrophic events. The committee has also called for an end to the devastating harm that's being leveled on children's lives in the occupied Palestinian territory. It has also called on all parties to protect all children and to provide all the necessary medical and protective support, including psychological support, to begin the long process of overcoming the consequences of these grave violations.
Then, of course, we have the trauma. When finally the fighting stops, the cost to children and their communities is going to be borne out for generations to come. Before this latest escalation, before it, more than 800,000 children in Gaza, that's three quarters of the entire child population of Gaza, were identified as needing mental health and psychological support. Again, that's before this latest nightmare.
In a desperate move, Palestinian children and their parents have started writing their names on their bodies in black ink so that they can be identified in hospitals if they are killed or injured in Israeli strikes. Children pulled from the wreckage of buildings are sometimes unrecognizable due to grave injuries. Heartbreaking photos of children lying on steel trays inside Gaza hospital morgues with their sleeves or legs of trousers pushed up to reveal their names have been going viral on social media. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, said in a report last Tuesday that almost every child in Gaza has been exposed to deeply distressing events and trauma.
We're talking about children witnessing their parents, their families, their sisters and brothers being killed in front of them, their houses, their community is disappearing in a split second. This has a big toll on their emotional, psychological, and mental health.
The report highlighted that children are experiencing widespread destruction, relentless attacks, displacements, and severe shortages of essential necessities like food, water, and medicine. The report added that without stable electricity and fuel supplies, essential facilities like hospitals, desalination plants, and water pumping stations cannot work properly.
It's interesting, Amy, we have a formula at the United Nations that is applied to virtually every other conflict situation. But when it comes to the situation in Israel and Palestine, there's a different set of rules, apparently. And that's, I think, a big source of my frustration. Where is the transitional justice process? Where is the UN protection force to protect all civilians? Where is the tribunal for accountability? Where is the action on the part of the Security Council, the only mechanism in the United Nations that has enforcement to ensure protection in the occupied territories?
An Israeli minister has claimed that dropping a nuclear bomb on the blockaded Gaza Strip is an option. The Israeli Heritage Minister Eliyahu made the remarks in an interview with Radio Kol Barama. Eliyahu also insisted that allowing any humanitarian aid into Gaza was wrong, claiming there is no such thing as uninvolved civilians in Gaza, calling the innocent civilian population in Gaza Nazis. Following the remarks, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu suspended the minister from cabinet meetings. Hamas resistance movement, however, pointed out that Eliyahu's remarks were reflective of the Netanyahu regime's genocidal mindset.
The statement by what is called the Israeli Heritage Minister in the Zionist cabinet that throwing a nuclear weapon on the Gaza Strip is one of the solutions didn't come out of nowhere, but it is an expression on the level of decadence, Nazism, and sadism that takes place in the minds of the cabinet of the occupying entity that is based on murder and genocide.
The remarks also drew condemnation from around the Arab world, and Iran called for a swift international response. The United Nations Security Council and the International Atomic Energy Agency must take immediate and uninterrupted action to disarm this barbaric and apartheid regime. Russia has joined a chorus of condemnation that was sparked over controversial remarks made by an Israeli minister about the regime's openness to a nuclear strike in the Gaza Strip. Maria Zakharova, Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman, said that the main issue was that Israel appeared to have admitted that it had nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and other Arab states have all denounced the comments. Arab League Secretary General Ahmed Abolteit has said the remarks revealed that Israel possesses nuclear weapons, which is an open secret. He also added that the comments also confirm the truth of the racist view Israelis hold against Palestinians. Since Israel's war began on Gaza on October the 7th, the Israeli military has dropped more than 25,000 tons of explosives on Gaza, equivalent in power to two of the nuclear bombs used on Hiroshima. EuroMed Human Rights Monitor has said Israel has admitted to bombing over 12,000 targets in the Gaza Strip, with a record tally of bombs exceeding 10 kilograms of explosives per individual. Israel's use of internationally banned weapons in its attacks on the Gaza Strip has also been documented, especially the use of cluster and phosphorus bombs. The Israeli regime is estimated to possess 200 to 400 nuclear warheads in its arsenal, making it the sole possessor of non-conventional arms in the Middle East and the wider West Asia region. Tel Aviv, however, neither admits nor denies owning the weapons under a policy of deliberate nuclear ambiguity. It has also defied international calls for it to sign the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, the NPT, something that further corroborates its running of an offensive nuclear weapons program. The United Nations General Assembly has already backed a resolution urging the regime to give up its nuclear weapons and join the NPT.
Gaza Strip skyline. Israel's bombing campaign continues. An apocalyptic scene. It appears Israel is using the banned white phosphorus bombs again. Bombs which burns the skin down to the bone. The death toll continues to mount, like at the Al-Maghazi camp. 51 Palestinians murdered. Another massacre on top of the others. Genocide on speed. The cries over the loss of a beloved one, which is why people are angry worldwide. But the biggest rally for Palestinians ever to have taken place in Washington, D.C. The war is coming at a cost for Israel. Diplomatically, Bolivia cut off relations with Israel, with Turkey, Colombia, Chad, and Honduras recalling their ambassadors. Persian Gulf Arab leaders meeting with the U.S. Secretary of State. They all called for a ceasefire, but Blinken did not blink. No to a ceasefire, and on a humanitarian pause, a big maybe.
It's our view that a ceasefire now would simply leave Hamas in place.
Yet Blinken had only echoed Netanyahu's statements on a ceasefire.
Calls for a ceasefire are calls for Israel to surrender to Hamas.
David Petraeus, the retired general of the U.S. Army, responsible in part for his failure in Afghanistan and also in Iraq, in a leaked audio file, encouraged and approved Israel's carnage in Gaza.
I see no alternative to the destruction of Hamas, and I use that term specifically because, as Aviv knows, there's a military doctrinal term. It's a gradation. You know, you can disrupt, you can deny, you can defeat, you can destroy.
But he must not have been prepared for what an Israeli minister said when asked whether an atomic bomb should be dropped on the Gaza Strip. Amihai Eliyahu said this is one of the possibilities. Let's not forget, the Gaza Strip has already been hit by an atomic bomb. But not at once. Slowly, 25,000 tons dropped on the Strip so far. The resistance fighters slammed these comments as reflective of the evil and terrorist nature of the regime, while they fought street battles against the Israeli regime forces. Israel has suffered casualties as a result. The tide may be turning, with costs mounting for the U.S. and Israel. For Israel, the worldwide anti-Israel protests have shattered its image. These protests have also worked against the U.S.
It's definitely ceasefire. People are getting killed every minute.
In the U.S., there are worries about the aftermath of the war. It's time for Israel's friends to recognize that the current operational approach is causing an unacceptable level of civilian harm and does not appear likely to achieve the goal of permanently ending the threat from Hamas, is what this high-ranking senator said. In other words, the U.S. is at the phase of the war where people are starting to worry about how they will look when this is over. And they are worried about votes also, as cynical as that sounds. Muslim and Arab American groups have threatened to not vote for Biden in 2024. This includes Democratic Party leaders from contested states that can decide elections, such as Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. That, combined with the sanctioning of Israeli products, which has also gained traction, especially amongst the Generation Zs in the U.S., and not just in the U.S., but around the world.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرض.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam was brought up under the care of the Holy Prophet Muhammad when he was just a small child. And so in this manner, the foundation of the moral and spiritual education of this magnificently intelligent child was based by the Prophet of Islam himself, the greatest educator of all mankind. Imam Ali's mental faculties were to an extent that he believed in the Holy Prophet and his mission at the tender age of 8. Therefore, Imam Ali, contrary to the other companions of the Holy Prophet, had never worshipped idols and never partook in the unreasonable demands, the oppressive actions, or the unjust acts of the Arab chieftains.
أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام، وقال عليه السلام في قوله تعالى: إن الله يأمر بالعدل والإحسان، العدل الإنصاف والإحسان التفضل.
Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam said about Allah saying in the Quran, chapter 16, verse 90, "Verily, Allah enjoins justice, adl, and benevolence, ihsan." Here, adl means equidistribution, and ihsan means favor.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's to my brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, dear friends, it is such an honor to be talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Truly, we have done many episodes on the universal persona of His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, the rightful successor to the Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. Now, what's really beautiful is that despite all of the things that we can talk about, or at least all of the things that we have spoken about as regards to Imam Ali alayhi salam, still there are so many things to speak about. This is what makes the persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam a universal persona. And even more far-reaching and profound than this is the fact that you don't have to be a Muslim to take advantage of and benefit from the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. You should, you know, go out there and tell people about this universal persona, and you should explain to the people, you should teach the people, whenever you find the opportunity to be able to bring up the name of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Sometimes there's a problem at work or at school, or sometimes you have a conversation with your teacher or your coworker. There's always place to be able to add, you know, a quote or a little, you know, conceptual Islamic understanding, or to just tell a little story about Imam Ali alayhi salam. And you will find that people appreciate it and people accept it, and people, inshallah, will, as we said, appreciate it from you. Now, one of the things that we see when it comes to Imam Ali alayhi salam, of course, is this idea of having a soft heart. Now, the Holy Quran also refers to a hard heart, when a person becomes stone-hearted, when mercy and this kind of compassion leaves a human being, and they start to become very rough, they start to become very cruel, in some cases oppressive, tyrannical, bloodthirsty. And so having a soft heart, again, is something that is very important. And Imam Ali alayhi salam, of course, he had this soft heart. Now, don't get us wrong. This soft heart is towards those who deserve being soft-hearted with. So, for example, the mu'mineen and the Muslims and, you know, the rest of humanity, which is not a open enemy to Islam. When it comes to the open enemies of Islam, then, of course, you cannot be soft-hearted with them. You cannot be lenient and flexible. Because if you're lenient and flexible with one who is a open enemy to Islam, well, of course, they're going to hurt Islam, they're going to hurt you, they're going to be violent with you, they're going to put you in danger, and they are a threat to you. So you have to stand tall and you have to stand firm. Now, when specifically talking about a soft heart and how to soften your heart, it's interesting. Two things have been stated. One of them is to contemplate a lot, to reflect, to think about the realities of life, the realities of death, the grave, the hereafter, the realities of the current world, it's how temporary it is, you know, to reflect upon one's life, upon one's past, what was done, what was good, what was bad, how much time we used, what we used our time on, was it used on getting closer to Allah or getting farther from Allah? And all of these things come about with contemplation and thinking and taking time out to really think about everything that is going on. Of course, along and within the framework of the Holy Quran and the seerah and the sunnah of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him, and the infallible and immaculate imams. That framework is very important because if you start thinking about, for example, when is the next major film going to come out, well, that's not of any use to any of us either in this world nor the next. But contemplation. The second thing is to weep and to cry out of the fear of the awe and the majesty of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, right? And this is something that it takes practice and it takes time. It is not something that can be easily done overnight, even though it can, but naturally, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. Of course, it starts with contemplation and thinking about the greatness of Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted, the majesty, the supremacy, the power of Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted, the mightiness of Allah, the exaltedness of Allah, the absolute power and the knowledge of Allah. All of these things begin to really make a human being fall into sajda, fall into prostration in front of the awe and the majesty. And eventually, there are many different things which we don't have time to talk about on the program that induce one to weeping. One of them, of course, is to remember the disobedience of the past, and which, inshallah, leads to reformation and a new, brighter, and better future. A very beautiful lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program To My Brother. This moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
أشهد أنك جاهدت في الله حق جهاده وعملت بكتابه واتبعت سنن نبيه.
I testify that you made utmost efforts, as it should be, in the cause of Allah, acted upon his book, followed the way of life of his prophet, blessings of Allah be on him and his children, to the last moment of your life, until Allah invited you to come unto him and used his discretion to take you away and sealed your enemy's doom with the blame that the arguments had been made known to one and all through you. O Allah, let me be happy and satisfied with that which thou considers good for me. Let me agree with that which thou decides for me. Let me passionately remember thee and invoke thee. Let me be in love with thy pure and sincere friends. Let me be well-liked and respected on the earth and in the heavens. Let me be unruffled and well-composed in the midst of misfortunes. Let me be gratefully thankful in prosperity. Let me be mindful of much and more bounties. Let me ardently desire for the heart-warming meeting with thee. well equipped with piety to gain my end on the day of requital. Let me follow into the footsteps of thy representatives. Let me disassociate myself from the mannerism of thy enemies. Let me pass my time in this world by praising and glorifying thee.
كل صبح وكل اشراق ايام تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاق قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
Now we invite you to listen to Brother Hassanain Rajabali.
Islam in its fullest motion in the Quran, that Imam Ali alayhi salam, how did he reduce the casualty? By the way, 20,000 people were killed in that battle. That's a lot of lives, relatively speaking. Then, today we have 7 billion people. Then we didn't even have a billion. Don't forget that. So, there was a lot of death, 20,000. But Imam wants to cut the casualty. He says to one of his soldiers, he says to Malik Ashtar, I think, and says, go to that camel and kill, cut the legs of that camel, for it's that camel that's keeping the spirit alive. And the soldiers attack the camel, and they cut the legs of the camel, and the camel falls. She was still in the cage. She falls with the cage, unhurt. And the battle stops. Because the enemy realized, oops, our flag is gone. The morale died, and Imam Ali saves the day. So when he takes this wife and tells her, pack up, let's go back to Medina. How does he do it with dignity, brothers and sisters? Not with taunting and cursing and bad names and throwing rocks at such people. No. We have to obey Imam Ali alayhi salam's sunnah in the sense that he is the reflection of the Holy Prophet. His transactions are a command upon us by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Imam does not taunt her, does not curse her, does not damn her in public. He sends her brother, Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr, and says, go and talk to your sister that she should now pack up and let's go back to Medina. For you have been commanded by Allah in the Quran. وَقَرْنَا فِي بُيُوتِكُنَّ Remain in your houses, O wives of the Prophet. She refuses. Then Imam Hassan goes. And Imam Hassan tells her something that she quickly packs up and goes back. I won't discuss that tonight. There was something Imam Ali alayhi salam had in his hand as a trump card. If Imam uses it, many, many are things they wouldn't like. And Imam threatens, says, I will use it. She quickly packs up and goes back. And dignified, Imam never does anything else. Like, Wallah yuhibbul muqsitin. Allah loves the peacemakers. Tonight we commemorate the shahada of Imam Ali alayhi salam on these grounds. On the grounds of hikmah. On the grounds of justice. That while he is the Khalifa, when somebody, a Christian man, takes his shield, Imam doesn't taunt him. And says, I am the Khalifa, you have stolen my shield. Give it back to me and I will behead you. No, he goes into court and the judge, by his title, higher status, and Imam is annoyed. And the judge says, you're already annoyed. He said, how dare you have given me a higher status before you have passed the judgment, before you have heard the arguments, how did you confer upon me greater status? Will you find just people like this in the world today? That the minute we get a little authority, we want to abuse it. You think Imam Ali alayhi salam can be compared on this earth like this? That's why Allah says, "Anfusana wa anfusakum." That when he goes to the grave, when he goes to the masjid, and he becomes shaheed, that stroke should strike our hearts. That I need this man as my role model. For if I'm ever going to come to its perfection, to the love of the Prophet, because he is my reflector of the Prophet. There's the Prophet said, "Wash-shamsi wa duhaha wal-qamari idha talaha." By the sun and its brilliance, and the moon which follows it. He says, I am that sun, and the moon that follows me is Ali ibn Abi Talib, and the remaining 11 imams who will reflect me when I am not there.
Did
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Mother, don't cry for me. I'm heading off to war. God Almighty is my armor and sword. Palestine, forever Palestine. Children being killed for throwing stones in the sky. They say to their parents, don't worry, God is on our side. Palestine, forever Palestine.
Eye on Islam.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens. Each week we consider a trending news story and we break it down from an Islamic perspective. This week, our hearts, thoughts, and prayers are still focused on the people of Palestine amidst Israel's ongoing attempt at a genocide of the people of Gaza. The Israelis have now launched their ground invasion, but are facing stiff resistance, incurring major losses before they've even reached into major urban areas. In this episode, we will be exploring the outpouring of support for Gaza from across the Muslim Ummah and compare that to the ridiculous positions taken by the rulers of most of those nations. We begin by having a look at which Muslim governments have relations with the Zionist entity and which ones still steadfastly refuse to normalize.
Ever since the founding of the Zionist entity in 1948, its leaders have waged an obsessive campaign to seek the approval of the international community of nations, and one area of focus has always been on the Muslim world. A year after the entity's founding, Turkey established ties, making it the first Muslim country to do so. Although, of course, the Turkish Republic at the time was fiercely anti-Islamic and aggressively secular, more so than it is today. It was in 1978 when the first Arab state recognized Israel, with the signing of the Camp David Accord by the Egyptian president Anwar Sadat, paving the way to a treaty between the two neighbors. Jordan followed suit in 1994, with King Hussein signing the Washington Declaration on the White House lawn during the presidency of Bill Clinton to establish his country's ties with the entity. It wasn't until 2020, with the intense lobbying pressure of President Donald Trump and his Zionist son-in-law Jared Kushner, that more Arab countries normalized ties with Israel, with the UAE, Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan all signing up to the so-called Abraham Accords. But of course, many Muslim and Arab countries refused to sign deals with Israel, with Iraq passing a law last year criminalizing any attempts to normalize with Israel, while countries like Lebanon and Syria still have land that is occupied by Israel, and they refuse to engage at all with the Zionist entity. But perhaps the most consequential position taken by a Muslim nation vis-a-vis Israel is that of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Following the overthrow of the Iranian Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh in a U.S.-UK instigated coup in 1953, the reinstated Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi quickly established ties with the Zionist regime. Those continued until 1979, when the return after 15 years in exile of Ayatollah Khomeini culminated in the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. And with it, not just a total cutting off of all ties with the Zionist regime, but a story of almost 45 years of political, financial, and material support for numerous anti-Israeli resistance movements. Which leaves one glaring question about another major power in the region. Before the Al-Aqsa Flood operation,
reports emerged of an impending normalization deal between Israel and Saudi Arabia, but with the Muslim world enraged at Israel's genocidal massacres and Saudi placing the blame for the latest violence squarely at the door of Israel, it would appear, for now at least, that those moves to normalize are dead in the water.
Joining us today on the show are two very special guests. Sister Noor Fekri is a business owner and politics graduate with a keen interest in West Asia. She successfully used social media to shine light on religious and political events in a way that is accessible to the everyday person. And we are very honored to have joining us today in the studio Dr. Ali Al-Kabani, who is an Egyptian journalist based in London and former director general of the Islamic Press Agency.